Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Ball just on the Detroit side of the 50. Slovis steps up to the center. Eli Cox takes a knee, and it is over. The preseason comes to an end with a dominating performance by the Texans, 26-7. They go 2-1 on the preseason, and look forward to the opener, September 7th at L.A. Let's go. Houston, ready for the Rams.
All of our coaches, it's important for me to get input from everyone. Our position coaches, special teams coaches, we're all in this together. So it's not just ultimately the decision will come down between myself and Nick. It won't be a rash decision because we've been thinking about this for a while, and it all works itself out in the end. And I know we'll have, wherever those 53 guys are, we're going to have 53 tough guys who are mentally and physically tough and ready to hit the season run.
All right, so that's the project now for the next 24 hours or so. Put a roster together based on training camp, based on what they've seen in the offseason, based on the three games. You heard the final call right there. Mark Vandermeer on the call. The Texans win on Saturday 26-7 over the Detroit Lions, and the preseason is over. And now our long 13-day wait begins for week one to get here. Welcome in, everybody. I am Sean Pendergast on a Monday. He is Seth Payne. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm still perpetually peeved that the NFL decides to take Labor Day weekend off.
Yeah.
You know, we'll work on Christmas, but Labor Day, no, it's sacrosanct. We will not work on Labor Day weekend.
It's a long 2 weeks, man.
It's not that they're honoring Labor Day. It's that they just, especially in the Northeast where people start school after Labor Day.
Yeah.
I think it's people don't get the viewership on Labor Day that they want. So.
Yeah.
The Texans last year announced all of their final cuts basically right at the deadline on Tuesday. So for all of you who are refreshing your social media every 15 minutes trying to figure out what's going on.
It's a fool's errand.
Yeah, there's probably going to be a few leaks here and there. Just, you know, if the Texans are trying to see if there's interest for a trade or something like that.
Yeah.
But by and large, you're probably not going to hear a lot of news until tomorrow. That's what I suspect. I might be completely wrong on that. Maybe they change their tactics.
Well, some teams have had cuts so far. You're right. I mean, D'Amico said we're going to take we don't just do this willy-nilly. We're going to take a good strong look at it. And this is granted, there are a few positions that I think the depth resides on other teams' rosters right now, probably the back end. The secondary might be one of those. There may be one or two other position groups where the Texans will be shopping around to see what recyclables people have put at the end of their driveway. But this is going through the exercise, and we'll go through it a little later in the show at 7 o'clock and look at it a little deeper. This is absolutely the deepest team they've had since D'Amico Ryans got here. There's no question about that.
Yeah, this is the first time, and a lot of our listeners have echoed that comment, that this is the most closely they've been watching the back end of the depth chart, and where it feels like, oh, man, one of these running backs is probably going to get cut, and it's going to hurt a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think people have formed an affection for Juwar Jordan. How could you not? He's a small guy that runs like a big guy, or at least tries to. He goes between the tackles. He's brave. He's flashed in the preseason.
He's looked good. That's the big thing. That's the big thing.
But especially
thing,
as a smaller guy. You love the smaller guys that just do everything.
Oh, for sure.
Everything that a smaller guy needs to do. Like, okay, is he scrappy? Is he tough? All of that. It looks like he is.
Yeah.
But he might just get squeezed out because of numbers. British Brooks, likewise. So there's a lot of guys that people really, really like, and hopefully the Texans can keep on the practice squad, but who are at risk of being cut in the next 24 hours or so.
Yeah, we'll go through some of those battles here. I think we'll do it more at 7 o'clock when we've got a little bit more room to kind of spread the whole thing out here. It feels to me, Seth, after doing kind of the chicken scratch math on the back of a napkin last night, it feels like there's about six or seven spots that are in a state of flux right now, kind of fluid, and there's like 14 or 15 guys going for those six or seven spots right now. We'll lay out all the names and stuff later in the show. As far as the game on Saturday goes, the end result, you know, that's not going to impact the Texans nor the Lions one iota during the regular season. I do think there are a couple of takeaways I had from it, though, that were encouraging to me that do map more towards big picture stuff. And the first is the depth. You know, that is your depth out there fighting against another team's depth. These last two games, the win over the Panthers and the win over the Lions. Look, you won those two games by a combined 46-10. Your backup guys, I don't know if they're more talented than the Lions guys, but this kind of goes to my second point, which is the way that they've executed. I don't care if it's been the ones, twos, or threes out there on either side of the ball. This is at least an indicator of a, on the offensive side especially, a better coached team than last season.
Yeah, and I think you already started off taking everything with a grain of salt in the preseason, but then last week especially, because it was the Panthers who were a bad football team last year, one of the worst defenses in league history last year, you take that with an extra grain of salt. Mm-hmm. This week it's going against the Detroit Lions, and it sounds like they had a very competitive joint practice on Thursday when it was ones versus the ones. But then when you get into the depth, your team is really taking another good team's depth to the woodshed.
Yeah.
So that's good to see, and I don't think it's something that we would have seen in the preseason last year necessarily. Yeah. Graham Mertz, I don't know where the hell that came from.
Dude.
14 of 16, and the two incompletions might have just been miscommunications between him and the receiver.
Yeah.
So it was even better than the 14 of 16 might suggest. He didn't make a bad pass. He had the one to Cephas in the end zone where Cephas tapped his chest on the way back to the huddle. And I think he just, you know, because the ball was placed right there in bounds. If he had just looked forward earlier and gotten outside. And then there was the one down the sideline. Likewise, it dropped exactly where the wide receiver could have caught it along the sideline.
Yeah.
So whether it was miscommunication or whatever, I mean, he was, for all intents and purposes, he basically had a perfect first half.
He did. Yeah, he was 14 of 16 for 145 yards. Well, the Cephas one, too. They went right back to it on the other side of the end zone.
Right,
Cephas.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like it's like, well, let's try it again. Let's get it right. And apparently Cephas had a catch like that in the joint practice on Thursday as well. I don't think he's making the team. There were a lot of these receivers who aren't going to make the team who had really good games on Saturday.
That Cornell Powell. Who started off on the TV broadcast. I felt so bad for Cornell Powell because Tre'Mon Smith had a nice return.
Yeah.
And because they're both wearing number 11, he was misidentified as Cornell Powell by the broadcasters. They quickly corrected it. But I felt bad for Cornell Powell. I was like, oh, man, guy gets his name. You know, they get all excited about him. His parents might have gotten excited for a brief moment.
Not even him.
Yeah, and then but then he goes off.
Yeah,
he goes off in the game.
Yeah,
good for you, Cornell Powell.
Six catches for 63 yards. Quintez Cephas had four catches for 51 yards and a touchdown. Now he did juggle a ball that turned into an interception, so that wasn't good for old Cephas. But none of these guys are making the team. But some of them may get brought back on the practice squad. I mean, the guys playing in the second half of that game are campaigning just as much to get a jersey on the practice squad.
Yeah.
As the guys in the first half are campaigning to make the 53 or work their way up the depth chart.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fighting going on out there.
Yeah, and they've, you know, Cephas has been here before, but both those guys, I think one of those guys at least might have made himself an insurance policy if he doesn't get picked up elsewhere, because I think the Texans are going to want to keep at least one of those guys.
When you were a rookie, you were drafted in the fourth round. Did you, on this day, you know, the day or 2 days after the final preseason game where they're cutting down the roster, did you think you were making the team?
Yeah, I was pretty sure. I think a coach had basically told me.
Oh, really?
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd had a pretty good preseason. Yeah. I knew from the offensive lineman that I was probably going to make the team.
Okay. Yeah. Because the next day, the next 24 hours, from everybody you talk to who've been on the bubble before, is they're sitting around hoping their phone doesn't ring. If your phone rings, that's a bad sign.
That was the biggest, that was a kind of a shock to me, was when I started seeing guys from my rookie class get cut.
Yeah.
And just kind of, I showed up at the facility as a couple of them were walking out, and stopped and talked to one of them. And it was, you got to remember, for a lot of guys, this is like the first time in their life they've ever been rejected from a sports team.
That's right.
You go through your entire life usually being one of the best guys on every team you've been on.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you've got a football team picking you last at recess, or not picking you
Not even picking you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even.
They're like, no, I'm going to take the kid that eats his boogers. Yeah. No, we're not taking you.
And sometimes you don't get picked because you're the new kid and you just moved in. They don't know what you can do. This is after watching you.
Right.
For 8 jillion snaps through the preseason, they're like, yep, we watched you, and we still don't want you.
I saw that kid get his shoelaces tied up in the jungle gym. There's no way in hell we're having him on our team.
That's right.
So it's a shock to the system when you've been rejected for the first time in your life like that. And, I remember seeing one of my One of the guys in my rookie class, kind of, I could see he had tears in his eyes and everything. He's walking out.
Yeah, man.
Bad.
Yeah, and a lot of them, it's the last time they
played. Get a hold of yourself,
yeah,
man.
Like the Godfather, shaken by his lapels. You can act like a man.
Gave him the old movie slap.
Yes,
front
yes.
and back slap.
With a glove. You pulled a glove out of your pocket and slapped him in the face. Yes.
You're going to pick yourself up off the turf and yeah. you're going to get back in there. He actually ended up doing really well.
That's
in
the good.
Financial.
That's good.
Financial. Yeah.
Oh, not in football, though. Yeah.
No.
What's your biggest concern still coming out of training camp here?
My biggest concern is depth in the secondary. Yeah. And D'Angelo Ross did not help me feel any better about that. D'Angelo Ross
he won't be
missing
here,
an arm tackle on that kickoff return. Yeah. That's what started it off for me.
You mean D'Angelo Ross?
Who is that?
Who's on the team for special teams purposes?
Who is that just casually throwing a left arm in the direction of the returner
right.
before he goes another 30 or 40 yards? Oh, and then...
Yeah.
Okay, great. I guess this Tesla has been having a great camp and whatnot, but I don't know. Could you put up a fight a little bit?
Yeah.
So the depth in the secondary right now is a lot of guys who have been the depth in the secondary in previous seasons when we've thought, I'm not so stoked about depth in the secondary.
No. MJ Stewart might be starting at safety for you in week one if CJ Gardner-Johnson doesn't come back. That's not ideal. Yeah, like guys like Tremont.
It's not ideal, but it's also MJ. I'm not as concerned about the one safety. I like C.J. Gardner-Johnson a lot better.
Of course.
They've played good defense out there with M.J. Stewart on the field.
Yeah.
The cornerbacks are just so crucial.
Yeah.
And right now, I don't feel all warm and fuzzy inside about it.
That Jalen Smith, the third-round rookie, is as vital to the infrastructure of the secondary
yeah.
right now. You're right, is an indicator. You know, he's been a pro for 2 months or whatever it is. And now, like, boy, if Jalen Smith goes down, you drop off a cliff at that slot corner spot.
Well, and that's where, too, if Jalen Petrie goes back and plays safety.
Yeah.
Then, or if Miles Bryant goes back and plays safety, then that depth at cornerback is tested even more.
Yep. All right, so we'll get into that. I think that is a big one. I think there's other concerns as well coming out of camp, but overall pretty good. Now, running back... And by the way, Astros take 3 out of 4 from the Orioles this week, and we'll dig into that at 6:45 today on the show. We had Damian Pierce on the postgame show on Saturday. And Damian Pierce, always brutally honest, assessing himself, but I think also let us in a little bit, at least for him, on what the issues were last season for Damian Pierce. This is some audio you won't want to miss. This was Damian Pierce on the postgame on Saturday. We'll hit that coming up next. Stay there.
Man, it felt amazing, man. It's been a long 4.5 months for me, but I'm just glad to put the pads on and get them back popping, man, just in time for the season.
All right, so that was Damian Pierce on the postgame show on Saturday. Clint Sterner and I talked to him after the game. 7 carries, 17 yards, so in the box score, nothing major. I thought he had a couple of runs, though, that looked like the old Damian. You know, there was a lot of moving forward with his runs, I thought,
yeah.
Seth.
Well, Eddie, and I think with the run game in general in that game, the box score didn't look great for any of the running backs, really. But when you look at the way the game went, the really encouraging thing was there were a lot of runs for first downs.
Yeah.
And they had 13 first downs by the run, 13 first downs by the pass. I think the Lions had 7 total first downs in the game. The Texans were just – they just dominated the game in a lot of ways. But the really interesting thing was, okay – you're getting run for 2 yards here. You're getting a run for 4 yards there. You're getting a 3 yard run, but it's for a first down.
Yeah.
The number of third and shorts in that game, like two thirds of the third downs were 3rd and 5 or less.
Yeah.
And it's just, you look at the Chiefs last year. They didn't have great offensive numbers, but you know what they did? They got to 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4 a lot, and they played good team football. And like the Texans were the exact opposite. C.J. Stroud had the second most 3rd and 10 pluses in the league last year.
Yeah. Numbers are interesting because I think if you're a team that averages like 4.5 yards a carry or more, it doesn't really matter how you get to that number. You're probably a pretty good offense. The Texans, if I'm not mistaken, if you take out Mertz's 2 scrambles and the 2 kneel downs at the end of the game, averaged about 3.9 yards per carry in that game, and they ran the ball a lot. Jawar Jordan had 15 carries. Damian had 7. There were other backs that were carrying the ball in there. And Woody Marks had a bunch of carries, 6 carries, I think, in that game. 3.9 yards per carry is interesting because That's about what the Texans averaged last year. The problem last year is so often they would average 3.9 yards per carry because Joe Mixon would break off a 60-yard run, and then everything else for the rest of the game would be this slog that was either run stuffs or negative runs.
Yeah.
And this 3.9 yards, to your point, was, hey, it's getting them in second and seven. Hey, that's getting them in third and three. That, to me, when you have a team that's just not an explosive run game, tell me what the down and distance situations are. You know, because, again, the number they averaged per carry in that game on Saturday was about what they did last season, but they're able to stay on the field. They're able to control the clock. Now, again, none of the guys that were doing this on Saturday are going to be on the field come week one against the Rams, but the hope is, and when the glimpses we've seen of the ones in situations, they too have been able to do that.
No, and I think that, so when we get to Damian Pierce here and some of the things he's talked about, it's very clear in him talking about Nick Caley and perhaps how it compares a little bit to Bobby Slowick, that there's a completely different mindset when it comes to the run game this year.
Yep, let's get to that. Here was Damian Pierce. Now take a listen to this. Clint and I both looked at each other. He brought up Bobby by name in this cut right here. This was Damian Pierce. Clint asked him about, hey, your role in this scheme versus your role in last year's scheme.
Man, I'm one of the guys who like seeing the whole line of scrimmage. You know, nothing against Bobby, but, you know, we was, you know, kind of pressing it on the outside zone and going lateral before we go vertical. But Caley, you know, he has a whole different approach to the run game. You know, he likes a lot of duos, counters, tight zone. And, you know, periodically, he likes to throw a few tosses in there. But like I said in the early interview, Caley kind of knows how to cater to the guys on the field and our skill sets. So I feel like when he see me in the game, you know, he keeps my shoulders square because, you know, that's when I'm at my best, I'm my most dangerous and I'm my most comfortable. So that definitely is some truth to what the commentator was saying. I feel good. Hopefully I look good out there, man. You know, I'm just glad to be back out there.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a shot at Bobby Slowick. I think it's just two different methodologies and that this one fits Damian Pierce better. And Nick Caley is just by virtue of his play calling all throughout training camp, both in practice and in the games, has shown that this is an offense that he wants to be about blunt force trauma.
Yeah.
That he wants to win physical battles and he wants his running backs to always, as D'Amico says constantly, every time he talks about running backs, he talks about running behind your pads. Like D'Amico, who's so good at kind of simplifying things for players and just letting them understand what the assignment is.
Yeah.
I think they want those 2 extra yards you get. They keep it from being instead of second and 10, it's second and 7, and you can work with that and just above all else, just keep moving forward. And that's what the run game is going to look like. And then the next test is, all right, you get into the regular season. Okay, which of these guys are? It's one thing to bully people in the preseason. It's another thing to bully people in the regular season when all the starters are out there. That's the next big test.
Yeah. And I think Damian ends up making the team in part because I don't think Joe Mixon is going to – my gut tells me Joe Mixon isn't going to start the season healthy. We haven't even seen Joe Mixon, like, out at practice. Like, he's been persona non grata. And for people who – if Damian ends up making the team, for people who are confused about that maybe, hey, Jawar Jordan's looked better. Damian hasn't practiced at all. They kept Damian around last year when he was not a scheme fit at all.
Yeah.
My guess is that there's a big part of them that does want to see what Damian looks like fully activated in this scheme.
And something that
fits him better.
The two guys that have been injured and haven't done much in training camp are Damian Pierce and Christian Harris. Those are the two guys on either side of the ball that you've kind of been wondering about, okay, what exactly are we going to see? I don't think either of them looked nearly like the most impressive versions of themselves. And Christian Harris got about 13 snaps in the game. And he did, you know, wasn't awful, but also didn't really show up and do some of the things that we've seen him do. Didn't necessarily have any opportunities to go sideline to sideline. I mean, his range is one of the things that's really impressive. Didn't get tested in coverage all that much. But you're almost taking a baseball mentality at this point. You know, I think the coaches are where they know what the upside of both these guys are. They know that they're coming back from injury. And now it's just a matter of, okay, hey, we got Lance McCullers coming back into the fold. Let's see how he does. Is that the name you wanted me to use?
Yeah.
Is that the name?
No. Use Javier. Oh, no, wait.
How about Jordan? Okay, yeah, we got Jordan coming back. As Jordan goes, So will go my optimism about Christian Harris and Damian Pierce.
There you go. There you go. If you're looking to feel good about Nick Caley and how this team is being coached, this was Damian Pierce when we asked him about pass protection by the running backs. It sure does look like you guys have been more on point with that here in the preseason than you were at the end of last year. What about that, Damian?
Wholeheartedly agree. Well, for one, it starts with Caley and Cole. Cole is like our offensive line coach. So those two guys do a great job of, you know, making it clear and concise for everyone, not just the running backs, everyone involved in pass protection, from the quarterback to the O-line to us, and then even receivers being dialed in on their hops, you know what I'm saying? So big shout-out to those guys. And then just to add more, you know, definition and, you know, being more concise on it, our running back coach, Coach DB, does a great job of making sure we're mentally and physically prepared every day, you know, whether it's drills, whether it's film, whether it's just walking and talking. You know, that's probably the most we spend our time on in the running back room is pass pros. Because, you know, DB has this thing. He says, you know, we know how to run the ball. You know, we wouldn't be here if we didn't know how to run the ball. So just make sure we protect the ball and protect the quarterback. So we spend a lot of time on that, and everybody has done a great job of buying into it and just, you know, putting our pride and joy into it. You know, we're very proudful about pass protection. We're very proudful about keeping seven off the dirt, because, you know, when seven is clean, we have a great chance of winning the football game.
Of the things that have jumped out in the preseason, if I could have a wish list of the things I would carry over into the regular season, if that's not at the top of the list, it's pretty damn close.
The
improvement in the pass protection.
Right. Now, that one, I look at as – I don't think Damian was trying to take a shot at Bobby Slowick, but I interpret it as a shot at Bobby Slowick, and that my biggest complaint with Bobby was that it always seemed like he was hell on wheels on the whiteboard. When it came to actually coaching things, I never got the sense that guys were being taught or coached properly. Whereas this is, hey, what's the most important thing? Keeping CJ Stroud healthy. Let's spend time on it. Let's be sure the offensive line is working with the running backs on pass protection and all those things. And it showed up. I mean, that if there's one thing I'll take from this preseason where I won't say, well, it's just the preseason, it was very clear by virtue of every single running back out there that I can remember had impressive moments in pass protection, including your young guys, your rookies. And that's not normal. Especially for your younger running backs. Usually you're cajoling your running backs to give a damn, your young running backs to give a damn about pass protection.
Yeah.
And that's my most rock solid indicator in my mind that Caley might really know what he's doing, because that was very, very impressive. Whether it was preseason, regular season, whatever, that was impressive.
Here's one more from Damian Pierce. Of course, he was brought back pretty slowly from his injury. He finally was able to put on the pads within the last week, got in at the joint practice and got seven carries in the game on Saturday. Was it difficult watching off to the side while guys are competing at your position?
For sure. You know, especially in the deep running back room, we got, you know, as a competitor, you know, it kind of sucked. And, you know, I had my moments of, you know, mentally going through like, damn, I want to be out there so bad. But just looking at the big picture and looking at the end goal of what I want for myself, it kind of brought me back to earth. And with that end goal being, you know, when I get back to the field, I want to be dominant. I want to be explosive. I want to be the me that I know I can be. And not prove anybody else wrong. I just want to prove – I'm more so focused on proving myself right. You know, the last few years, you know, I kind of just let everybody get to me, you know, rightfully so. You know, this is the NFL. You know, everybody look at what we do. You know, from the moment we report to camp to the last game of the season, you know. But just being on the sideline, focusing on the main goal, and just getting back healthy so – I can get back to my brand of football and my style of play.
You know, when he said that he maybe let everything get to him a little bit, and I thought he was talking about kind of just chatter by the media
noise.
Or fan base or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It reminded me a little bit of Arian Foster, and that Arian went through on a much bigger stage and under more scrutiny, got so much love as a young player, and then all of a sudden started to see the flip side of it, and it wears at you. Because once you let people in, then all of a sudden they affect you, because you're taking in all the positives, all the positives. And then all of a sudden, wait a second, these people that said they loved me are now saying unkind things about me.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a shock to your system.
Yep.
So I like that Damian kind of got to go through that and learn that lesson, maybe without it being quite as drastic, that you gotta focus on the guys in the building and try really, really hard to just I mean, it's nice to appreciate the nice things people say about you, but you always got to remember that largely that's not actual love. Not actual respect. That's you helping them win their fantasy draft.
Well, and you know who's really good at parsing that out? At least he's, by the talking the talk is CJ Stroud. Because he'll say all the time, like, yeah, well, they love, they'll love you 1 minute, and then the next minute, they hate you the next minute. Sports hate you.
I think he knows that academically. I think all young players these days go through you got to get genuinely callous at some point.
That's why I said talk the talk. He says the right things. Yeah.
Well, CJ went through it to the epitome at Ohio State, and now he's getting it on the flip side. Where now I get the sense from a lot of Ohio State fans, the ones who will calm down and speak at a normal heart rate. It is that
all five of them.
A lot of these Ohio State fans sure do seem to love CJ Stroud a lot more now than they did when he was at Ohio State. That, especially if they're also Browns fans, they're looking at it and they're like, well, sure, I might have criticized CJ a little bit at times back when he was in Columbus, but of course that's all neither here nor there.
He's not the one losing to Michigan anymore. It's somebody else doing that. Although they won the national championship.
CJ had an indoctrination into it earlier about being careful about all the praise.
For sure. Text message, Sean, you had a great take on Woody Marks looking a lot like rookie Dameon Pierce. And by that logic, Dameon Pierce should be the one who gets cut in 2025. My take on that, I think I had it on this show, I think, and I know I had it on the postgame show, was that if this team were not as good as they are, if they were like the team in 2022 that Dameon Pierce was on, I think Woody Marks would be getting a lot of that same Dameon Pierce love that Dameon was getting in 2022, and for some reason he was behind Rex Burkhead to start the season. Woody Marks has popped in practice and in these games. I think Woody Marks, especially if Joe Mixon is hurt, I think Woody Marks is going to be a much bigger part of this team's offense than people anticipate early in the season.
But he's also a different type of running back. So that's where I think that Woody Marks is almost in a separate category than Dameon Pierce, that because of his catching ability and everything else, and he's a smaller guy. Right now, you look at Dameon Pierce as, all right, this is your classic all-purpose back. Right now we have two other classic all-purpose backs, Joe Mixon, who might not be playing in week one, and Nick Chubb, who has looked good so far, but you can't expect that he's going to get 25 carries in a game, a few games in a row, and be just fine. He's still coming back from his knee injury. He's an aging running back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So for where the team is right now, I think they're kind of in separate conversations.
Do you think Woody gets touches in week one again?
Yeah.
If Joe Mixon is hurt, do you think Woody gets touches?
Yeah, especially. Yeah, I think the classic simple thing is, okay, at the very least on passing downs, Woody Marks is the guy you want in there because he's shown that you can count on him as a pass protector.
Yeah.
Usually the thing that keeps guys like Woody Marks off the field is, all right, well, great, he's a receiver, but because he can't pass block and because maybe he's not that good of an actual runner, then the defense, it's easy to, the defense can just treat him like another slot receiver or something. Where Woody Marks, because I think he's got genuine value as an all-around runner and because he can pass protect, there's no reason not to play him early on.
Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Headlines up next. We'll dig deep on the weekend that the Astros had. What did we like? What do we not like? They're up by two games in the AL West. We like that. We'll dig into the Astros weekend in Baltimore coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Ball just on the Detroit side of the 50. Slovis steps up to the center. Eli Cox takes a knee and it is over. The preseason comes to an end with a dominating performance by the Texans. 26-7. They go 2-1 on the preseason and look forward to the opener September 7th at LA. Let's go. Houston, ready for the Rams.
I'm Mark Vandermeer on the call. Final call in the final preseason game on Saturday. 26-7 win over the Detroit Lions, and now we wait and see over the next day or so, Seth, who makes the cut, who doesn't. We'll dig deeper into that at 7 o'clock today. But I would expect we'll start to see, although you pointed this out, we didn't see the names come out of the Texans till the day of the deadline last year.
The vast majority of the cuts last year were made a few hours before the deadline, but there were leaks here and there.
Yeah.
I can't remember which or what, but and sometimes when you're trying to, some of the guys that you think might have some trade value, maybe you leak that out on a Monday and then the other part too is, you know, if somebody, the waiver wire doesn't start until the final cuts are complete, so we'll see.
Graham Mertz, I guess, was the big story in that game, which, you know, he's battling with Keaton Slovis to be the emergency guy at this point, but it was one of the best preseason performances I've ever seen.
It really was. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Graham Mertz threw three interceptions in his debut. It did not look great. I don't know if all of those interceptions were his fault per se, but it wasn't great. He hadn't done much. And then he comes out there looking like a more athletic version of Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Don't say that I'm making a comp to Tom Brady with him. But by preseason standards, that was about as good as it gets.
Both drafted in the sixth round, Seth.
Right? Good point. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So he's a bit better than Tom Brady. I thought the one notable thing about that performance is that he got really good pass protection. So the offensive line, which was a lot of guys that might not make the team or definitively going to be backups, they did a better job in pass protection than in run blocking in that game. I'm not alarmed about the run blocking or anything, but it was notable that, man, Graham Mertz did a good job by and large of making use of a good pocket. Even that very first scramble he had, it wasn't like the pocket had broken down or anything.
No.
And he actually had a nice clean lane to run through because the pass protection had held up the middle. So, that was a very impressive. I feel right now like with Graham Mertz, it's almost like you win you've got the first two numbers of the Powerball.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, all right. This is intriguing.
Right.
I know, by and large, most times I'll be let down, but let's see what happens here.
Ah, crap. 18.
All right,
so the Texans win on Saturday, and now we'll wait over the next day or so to see who ends up making the 53, who gets brought back on the practice squad. We'll dig deeper into that at 7 o'clock today. The Astros take 3 out of 4 from the Orioles over the weekend. Took the first three, couple of slugfests that actually made me more nervous. I walked away from the 10-7 win on Friday and the 9-8 win on Saturday actually feeling a little bit worse about things than I... You know, like, the bats woke up. Okay, that's great. But a third of your starting rotation right now, two of the six that you're going to trot out there, during this, they got a big stretch coming up where they play 22 of 23 days here. They're going to, I would imagine, especially if you have starters that are only going 3-4 innings at a time, you're going to go with 6 starters. Lance McCullers and Christian Javier are not good right now. They're
not
bad.
At all. Yeah. And Lance McCullers is, I saw this stat and I didn't fact check it, but it sounds right that he's leading the league in pitches per inning. So I'm not, you know what? Sounds about it. It sure does feel like it. And neither of these guys have done anything that you feel you can trust. And the pitching staff, after being able to hang so much of your success earlier in the season on it, they've had the 8th worst ERA since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
So they're running on fumes until some of these starters start looking the way they're supposed to be looking.
Yeah, I mean,
if half of them can just start looking like credible pitchers, then please.
Yeah, things I liked. I mean, the bats woke up. You won 2 slugfests. That was good. Christian Walker is in a bit of a groove right now, so that's good to see. And especially if Yordan Alvarez reportedly coming back for this series. Yordan went 7-for-15. In Corpus over the 4 games that he played in. He played Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and yesterday. He had 2 hits again yesterday, a couple of doubles, drove in some runs. Didn't hit a home run in Corpus, but that's fine. He was making a lot of hard contact, so that's good. I mean, it's Yordan. If he's making hard contact, eventually several of them are going to fly out of the yard. If I'm going to bring up Javier and McCullers, Seth, and how concerning they are, then I would be remiss not to bring up that Spencer Arrighetti was scaring me in the first inning yesterday, but seemed to straighten some things out. He took the loss, but he pitched into the 6th inning, and he had a stretch there where he retired about 12 guys in a row in the game. So Spencer Arrighetti had an outing where I feel better about him. I just need one of these. I need one of these from Christian Javier. I don't know what Lance is going to be, because Lance has had a stretch this season where he looked like the old Lance again, and then all of a sudden, he didn't.
Yeah.
You know, he gets a foot injury, he gets a blister, he comes back, he's throwing 90 pitches in four innings. Like, this is, I feel like this is the McCullers we're going to get. I feel like if the playoffs were to start this week, McCullers definitely isn't on the playoff roster. And so that's where we are right now.
When I tried to tell you that, hey, Seth, or Sean, it's all cool. The trade deadline acquisitions for the pitching staff are the guys coming back from
IL.
Right, those are some horrible trades. This is the exact opposite of the Kikuchi trade, whatever that.
These are horrible.
The trade for Christian Javier off the IL, the trade for Lance McCullers, not a hot so far. Arrighetti, there's hope.
Yeah.
Arrighetti, there's hope.
Yeah.
The one positive from this, I did like that in the previous Orioles series, you saw three pitchers that you hadn't seen before, and they worked you over. You come into this series a week later, you make some tweaks, and then they score 20 runs on 20 hits in the 15 innings that were worked by those three pitchers.
Yeah.
So, okay. And bring Yordan back into the mix. That just it brings the stress level of the opposing pitchers up that much higher. So Christian Walker is looking a lot more like himself as of late. I feel good about that part of
it. That's the thing about Yordan coming back. Well, for one, he's a left-handed bat, which this team just does not have many of or any of. I mean, Jesus Sanchez bounced back nicely this weekend. But one, he's a left-handed bat. At a very basic level, there's that. But the thing about Yordan, like when Jake Meyers comes back, you can look at it and go, okay, Jake Meyers was hitting 306 or whatever. Whoever they've had in center field was hitting 250. He's 50 points better. That spot in the order gets better. Yordan Alvarez is a hitter who at his best transforms the entire lineup, or at least the couple of guys ahead of him and the couple guys behind him. It's not with Yordan, like the guy batting cleanup was doing this and now you're getting a better guy. Like Yordan is so good that pitchers have to be careful with the guy in front of him. And then it's a benefit to the guy behind him because more guys are getting on base.
Right. Yeah. And it's not even just and it's not just him, you know, knocking runs in or anything. It's the pitchers
the
having
mere
to
presence.
Adjust. It's the fact that you're gonna see more lefties. The Astros right now have the best OPS in the league versus lefties. Yeah. But it doesn't really matter because they also see the fewest left-handed pitchers in the league.
Yeah.
So like by virtue of bringing Yordan back, you can start to see a little bit more of a balance there.
Yep. All right, 53-man roster, the final debates. I think there's about 14 names battling for about six spots. We'll try and net it out in the most radio-friendly fashion. We've got acknowledgments. We've got a ton of acknowledgments to get to at 7:20 on the show. So we'll do that at 7:20. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.